The New Science of Physical Health.
I remember 2013, one Thursday evening, like it was yesterday. I was at McCafe, the name in Australia for McDonald's coffee shop, where I was doing this coffee run for my wife because I don't drink coffee. And it was long before we'd actually purchased our own home barista machine that would end the need forever for me to jump in the car and zip down the road to make an order. It was late, about 10 p.m., and McCafe would be closing shortly. I went up to the counter and made my wife's standard order. Can I have a skim milk, please? Latte, extra hot. I paid cash because the trend of tap and go with your card or your mobile phone on a credit card machine had not taken off just yet here in Australia. It would be another year before that process came down under. There were a few drive-through orders that were ahead of me at the time I was in the McCafe, but inside the cafe in the store itself was just a few people. It was almost empty. I always feel that you get served faster when you don't go through drive-through compared to the person who sits in their car and waits in a long line. So there I am, standing around, waiting, watching the staff go about their work, making my orders and other people. And suddenly, a blue flashing light pierces the McDonald's window in the dark night and fills up this empty cafe inside. A few moments later, two sets of footsteps come inside. And there, in front of me, shockingly to me, is the Prime Minister of Australia. The Right Honourable Tony Abbott is the title of the Prime Minister of the day. For those of you who are listening to the Wellness Wars that have never been to Australia, and there are plenty of you, by the way, as we have people that stream episodes from 96 countries and thousands of cities. The Prime Minister of Australia holds the same leadership position as the President of the USA. They are our top elected officials in the nation. The New Science of Physical Health. I'm Shane Stubbs, and the question is this: who will win the wellness wars? And on this particular night, I was excited and giddy, like a child meeting their sports heroes. Mr. Abbott was coming back from some political campaign engagement with his personal assistant that wasn't too far from my home here in Sydney, Australia. He was with his very tall assistant, who I didn't know who she was at the time, Miss Peter Credlin. And amazingly, they had decided to stop off and grab themselves a coffee at the exact same time that I'd turned up. So I did the obligatory handshake, I introduced myself for a quick photo and let them order their coffee and get back to their Commonwealth car and driver so they could go back to where they were going to in Sydney. And then I picked up my order, rushed home with my coffee for my wife, and had a great photo to share with her and a great short story. What is amazing for me is I've been interested in politics since I studied American and Russian politics in the Cold War era when I was in high school. See, I was a teenager of the 1980s, finishing high school in 1984, at the time when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States and Mikhail Gorbachev was the president of Russia. Thanks to CNN News that had commenced back in 1980, I was able to get a steady diet of what was happening in American politics in real time after I left high school. By the time I was 30 years old, Australia's most well-known billionaire media magnate, Rupert Murdoch, would begin the now famous Fox News in America. And I was a ferocious consumer of political stories that were shaping the United States landscape. It was always a fascinating country to me, the USA, due to my deep obsession with all things sport. I graduated from university here in Australia in 1988 with a Bachelor of Health and Physical Education. So essentially, I could be paid to play sports in school for the rest of my life. I'm doing that today, and I love it. So America in the 1980s and the 1990s, with people like Michael Jordan, the retiring Muhammad Ali, and many others, captured my imagination of sport. I loved watching the NFL, American football, which I considered to be this brutal game of chess on the sports field. Names like Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Emmitt Smith, Brett Favre, Troy Aikman, and Deion Sanders, they were all familiar to me. And this was very unusual for any Australian sports fan. All of my friends and PE teaching colleagues never spoke about these athletes or any myriad of others that I could mention from one of my other favorite sports like track and field, where there was Carl Lewis, the famous American sprinter and Olympic gold medalist, who I actually met and saw run here in Australia in 1999, just before the Sydney 2000 Olympics, or Florence Griffith Joyner, or the famous 400-meter hurdler Edwin Moses, and later Maurice Greene, Gail Devers, and Michael Johnson, all household names in track and field in the USA. America holds a unique interest for me because of sports back then, and it still does today. But the political landscape was and is a close second for me. I watched live on June 12, 1987, when President Ronald Reagan was in West Berlin and spoke in front of a massive crowd about the future of peace in a speech that history now records as a turning point. He had this comment to say to the Russian president, Mikhail Gorbachev.
There is one sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable, that would advance dramatically the cause of freedom and peace. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
It was perfect. It was beautiful. And he had to insist on keeping it in the speech. And he did it. Don't let anybody tell you it was a staffer or anybody else that did that.
That speech reverberated around the world. The Soviet leader at the time, Gorbachev, did not make an immediate or direct response. The speech by President Reagan was a public challenge to the Soviet Union, calling for the removal of the Berlin Wall, which had been a symbol of the Cold War division between East and West. However, it's important to note that Reagan's speech was not the sole factor that led to the eventual fall of the Berlin Wall. Gorbachev's policies, glasnost, which meant openness, and perestroika, which meant restructuring, contributed to the climate of increased political openness in the Eastern Bloc, which eventually led to significant changes. But the Berlin Wall finally fell November the 9th, 1989. The fall of the wall was a result of various factors, including peaceful demonstrations by citizens of East Germany, changes in Eastern European governments, and the relaxation of border controls by East German authorities. The historic event marked the beginning of the end of the Cold War and paved the way for the reunification of Germany, which officially took place on October 3rd, 1990. I would sadly say, in today's commentary, perhaps the Cold War or elements of the Cold War have returned as we look at the battle going on between Russia and the Ukraine and America's involvement in it. But this was the Berlin Wall, and the fall of the Berlin Wall was covered across American news. Listen to how CNN, about 2 minutes of their coverage of the Berlin Wall news story at the time, back in 1989.
It was the largest demonstration in East German history. The main square was carpeted with a half million people. The city virtually came to a standstill.
Our top story. The Iron Curtain between East Germany and West Berlin has come tumbling down. East Germany announced today it is opening its borders, allowing its citizens to go anywhere they wish. The future of the Berlin Wall is now up in the air.
The East Germany's communist leaders have now taken a symbolic sledgehammer to that wall. It's conceivable, I suppose, now that the wall, the real wall, the real sledgehammers will soon be brought out on that wall. There's no longer any point of it being there. A prospect that no one could have predicted a year ago or even a month ago.
This has been a city physically divided for 28 years, but now it's come together, east and west, in a spontaneous outburst of emotion.
This could be the first move to dismantling the Berlin Wall that has stood as the most painful symbol of a divided Germany since it was built in 1961.
One after another, drivers and passengers alike said they plan to use their new freedom to spend a weekend in West Germany and take a look at how the other half lives.
Every East German coming to the West receive 100 marks, about $50. Many West German businesses are staying open round the clock to give them a chance to not only spend their money, but pick up goods to take home.
Hundreds of thousands of East Germans swarmed the streets of West Berlin. It was like a sea of people.
This morning, a new hole was made in the Berlin Wall at Potsdamer Platz. Yesterday, it was the Glienicke Bridge that opened up. To many of us, these are just place names. But what signal do these places send to the German people?
Potsdamer Platz was the Times Square of Berlin before the war. I was on Glienicke Bridge yesterday, and I have never seen more grown men with tears in my eyes at any time in my life on that bridge.
The vast majority of East Germans don't want to leave homes, jobs, and families to go live in the West. The question now is whether the breaches in the wall have whetted the appetites of people here, not for just a little more change, but a lot. East German leaders hope that by dismantling those things that have become symbols of their past, they can encourage the return of skilled workers, the doctors, engineers, and scientists needed to rebuild the country's future.
I remember the fall of the Berlin Wall better than many Australians, not just because I was interested in the political fate of Russia and the USA and the subsequent impact on the whole world, including Australia, but because the fall of the Berlin Wall coincided with the biggest catastrophe of my family's existence. The Berlin Wall came down, as I've said, November the 9th, 1989. Just a mere 7 days before this, I took a phone call from my mother, where she said three words to me. Love, Dad's died. My father was only 46 years old and had suffered a sudden and massive heart attack. No warning, no symptoms. He woke up November the 1st, 1989, and it would be his last day alive. In that fateful moment, standing by my mother's side, their dreams were shattered, like fragments of a window. My twin brother and I had already left the home, left the nest, venturing into the world as young adults, eagerly anticipating the guidance and wisdom of our father that he would impart as we navigated the complexities of life. But it seemed like fate had other plans, and our dreams of growing alongside him, they were completely extinguished. The weight of his loss crushed me, a literal torrential downpour of grief that seemed to know no end. Questions flooded my mind, a relentless storm of doubt and anguish. Things like, how could this happen? Why were there no warnings, no signs of this impending disaster? How could he be snatched away in an instant? Was there anything we could have done to save him in the days, weeks, and months leading up? The torment of this unknown consumed me, literally invading my thoughts and leaving me grasping for answers that seemed forever out of reach. At the young age of 23, I just completed my studies in health, physical education, and sports science. I'd found myself working at this prestige health club in Canberra, literally a stone's throw away from the halls of power where decisions were made that shaped our nation's destiny. Canberra is our nation's capital, holds both seats of government, and the death of my father was this constant reminder of the fragility of life and the urgent need to understand why my father lost his wellness war. The grief I experienced during those years was unrelenting. It was just tearing at me on a day-after-day basis. It was emotional, all-consuming, but it also caused me to have this unwavering determination to uncover truths that lay hidden within the shadow of my father's untimely demise. I wanted to know, was it a simple twist of fate, an unkind stroke of luck, or was there a different path that we could have taken, one that would have led to a different outcome, a chance at a life lived in his presence? These questions, like an unfinished symphony, echoed through the chambers of my heart, demanding to be heard. The magnitude of my loss, from a family perspective, was relentless, and I just wanted to decipher, using my background with this degree that I just earned, using the career as I've developed over the last 37 years, I wanted to decipher the mysteries of wellness and unearth the literal keys that would unlock the secrets to a healthful and life fully lived. The pain of my father's absence became this daily catalyst that propelled me forward, guiding me as I delved into the depths of scientific knowledge and explored the intricacies of human well-being. Back in 2013, when I had that opportunity to meet the Prime Minister of Australia in that coffee shop, McCafe, it was the closest I'd had ever come to meeting someone like a president in person. My interest in politics, however, extended way beyond my personal encounters. As I've been following American politics so fiercely since back in 1983, when I was just 17 years of age, over the years, I've observed a significant and increasingly fierce divide between the left and right side of the political spectrum, fueled, in my observation, by cable TV channels seeking to create drama to boost their viewership and their advertising revenue. In the current political landscape, we find former President Donald Trump, a billionaire TV celebrity at 77 years of age, and current President Joe Biden at 80 years of age, vying for public attention. I remember back in the 80s when President Reagan was running to be president, that the topic of his age, 71 at the time, before he got elected, was considered to be far too old. How things have changed. But today, Fox News, as a prominent example, has been known to portray President Biden in a negative light and extol President Trump's virtues, attributing their business model of garnering higher ratings and increased revenue. Notably, Fox News faced a defamation lawsuit from a company called Dominion Voting Machines recently, resulting in a world record settlement of $787 million for Dominion Voting Machines against Fox News. In this case, Rupert Murdoch, the Australian billionaire and owner of Fox News, admitted that several Fox News hosts endorsed Trump's false narrative of a stolen election. On the other hand, CNN is perceived as the archenemy of Fox News and is often accused of having a left-leaning bias in its reporting, aligning with President Biden's political stance. Now, whilst CNN has faced some criticism, no other news reporting service has ever experienced defamation lawsuits on the scale of Fox News. For me, as an outsider of American politics, I observe political commentators from various networks, including CNN and Fox, and popular progressive YouTubers. Surprisingly, these commentators across the mass media and the cable television and the YouTubers, these commentators often generate as much drama amongst themselves as there is between the leading presidential candidates for 2024. In an upcoming episode of The Wellness Wars, I'm going to continue the political theme, which I love so much. I'm going to delve into some of these political commentator figures, such as Sean Hannity and Cenk Uygur, Brian Taylor Cohen and Ben Shapiro, Anna Kasparian and Kayleigh McEnany, David Pakman and Alex Jones, who collectively those group of people I just mentioned hold sway over an audience of over 100 million people and help shape the public's voting decisions. It will be well worth looking at them in this different filter of the wellness wars. In mid-2023, whilst recording episode one of the wellness wars, the news cycle is dominated by President Biden and former President Trump. This 24/7 billion-dollar cycle is fueled by newspapers, blogs, cable television, mainstream media, YouTube journalism, and podcasters, all seeking to capitalize on the political battle leading up to the next presidential election in 2024, about 15 months from now. In the wellness wars, I focus on comparing the health of these two world famous and prominent figures who help shape the destiny of our human society, President Biden and former President Trump. A journalist from Washington, D.C., Anita Mather Ashton, very recently published an article which was titled, "Which President is Healthier? Data Show Biden Will Likely Outlive Trump," providing valuable insights into their well-being. While Anita did an excellent job with the information available to her, most people have limited knowledge about the intricacies of physical health and the complex topic of positive molecular and physiological health adaptations which happen inside our bodies. Understanding how to generate these health adaptations is crucial for improving the structure and function of vital organs like heart, blood vessels, lungs, and cell integrity. For the general public, wellness often revolves around superficial aspects such as physical appearance and the results of medical diagnostics like blood pressure, cholesterol levels, blood sugar measurements. Unfortunately, we rarely get real-time insights into what is happening within our bodies, which hinders our ability to clinically reduce the risk of sickness, disease, and premature death. Imagine a situation knowing whether your body is generating positive or negative molecular and physiological health adaptations that would enable you to achieve a 30 to 54% reduction in clinical risks from complications and conditions like obesity or excess weight, cardiovascular events, diabetes, and metabolic disease. In the next episode of The Wellness Wars, we'll determine which president, Trump or Biden, faces the least risk of premature death. You'll have the opportunity in episode two to hear from some of the world's most esteemed experts, including renowned PhDs in cardiology, exercise physiology, public health, and vascular medicine. Together with this team of doctors that I've brought together, we'll introduce to you groundbreaking health biometrics, which you likely have never encountered before. We aim to show you precisely how you can assess who is winning the wellness war between the two presidents. In episode two, we begin with examining this amazing statement from President Donald Trump on physical activity, as cited by a New York article and the Washington Post's 2016 biography. Donald Trump believed that the human body operated like a battery, with exercise depleting its finite energy. Now, the big question as we finish out episode one of the Wellness Wars, is there evidence to support his notion? And how will this perspective fare in determining the winner of the first ever Wellness War? Stay tuned for episode two of the Wellness Wars to uncover the answers and discover the secrets as to which president, Trump or Biden, has optimal physical health and will be declared the winner of the Wellness War.
I
hope you've enjoyed this very first episode in the Wellness War series and comparing a showdown of famous people and their physical health outcomes. I wanted to just stop by before we wrap up this first ever episode and let you know that there is a link in the show notes to this episode to take you to a prelude page to the book called Who Will Win the Wellness Wars, A Showdown Between the Famous. There you'll see a cover of the book, and there's going to be a printed version, an audio version, and an ebook version. And we're giving away, to introduce the series, 50 copies of the book to people who are interested in exploring in depth all that the Wellness Wars are going to have to offer. There's also going to be in the future a mini series to complement the book, the podcast, audiobook, and ebook. It's a fantastic project that I am so deeply interested in sharing with you. So go and click on the link in this show notes to this episode, and you'll see how you can get access to being one of those 50 people that gets the free book, The Wellness Wars. Thanks for joining me. Bye for now.